Let's go.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, we close out the year with a visit to the Tustin Heritage Community Garden in Narrowsburg, New York. Visiting guest herbalist Richard Mandelbaum shares his knowledge about the benefits of some pollinator plants. And garden director Annie Stanley recognizes some of this year's garden accomplishments. Then we look ahead into the new year with a seasonal Gaelic blessing by botanist Diana Beresford Kroger and a call to plant chestnut trees. Coming up on today's Farm and Country, after news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Russian President Vladimir Putin has apologized to Azerbaijan's leader for this week's crash of an Azerbaijan Airlines plane. It's been widely claimed that Russia accidentally shot the plane down as it tried to land in Grozny on Wednesday. The BBC's Steve Rosenberg is in Moscow.
According to the Kremlin readout of their conversation, President Putin apologized to President Aliyev for what the Kremlin calls a tragic incident in Russian airspace, and expressed condolences to the families of the dead. 38 people were killed when Azerbaijan Airlines Flight 8243, having failed to land at Grozny Airport in the Russian North Caucasus, was redirected over the Caspian Sea to Kazakhstan, where it crash-landed. The Embraer 190 is widely believed to have been damaged by missiles fired by a Russian air defense system.
Today's Kremlin statement stopped short, though, of saying Russian air defenses were to blame for the crash. To New York now, where the state attorney general has released video of a fatal prison beating of an inmate. The video shows several white corrections officers punching and kicking a black handcuffed inmate who died the next day. NPR's Ava Pukach reports an investigation could lead to criminal charges for some or all of the 14 individuals involved.
Attorney General Letitia James says the body cam footage shows officers at Marcy Correctional Facility in upstate New York repeatedly punching and kicking inmate Robert Brooks in the face and groin and choking and striking him in the chest of a shoe as he lies on a medical examination table.
During the incident, he was handcuffed with his hands behind his back. He was pronounced dead at Wynn Hospital in Utica on December 10th.
Initial autopsy reports listed the cause of death as asphyxia due to the compression of the neck. Governor Kathy Hochul has ordered the termination of the 14 individuals involved. Ava Pukach, NPR News.
President-elect Donald Trump asking the Supreme Court to delay the law that requires a ban in the U.S. on the short video sharing app TikTok. Trump has filed a brief with the court saying he wants to pursue a political resolution as the court is set to hear arguments early next month on whether the ban violates free speech rights. Here's NPR's Bobby Allen.
In a brief supporting TikTok, groups including Columbia University's Knight First Amendment Institute compared the TikTok ban to China's Great Firewall, which makes popular news sites and social media services like X, Instagram, and YouTube inaccessible. But the Department of Justice says TikTok poses a unique national security threat because its corporate parent company is based in Beijing, and thus Americans are vulnerable to foreign manipulation. TikTok says it has cordoned off the American version of TikTok from Chinese influence. President-elect Donald Trump has at times voiced support for saving TikTok, and the law would grant Trump leeway to interpret its enforcement. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
This is NPR.
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
We light the candles of Hanukkah, oh Hanukkah, oh.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, botanist and author Diana Beresford Kroger shares a seasonal Gaelic blessing and a call to plant chestnut trees in the new year. But first, we have a visit to the Tustin Heritage Community Garden in Narrowsburg, New York. Visiting guest herbalist Richard Mandelbaum shares his knowledge about the benefits of some pollinator plants. And Community Garden Director Annie Stanley recognizes some of this year's accomplishments. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farming Country.
Figured we would walk around and talk about some plants found here, but ask anything you like.
Whether native or medicinal, many of the plants we grow for ornamental or ecological purposes provide food to pollinators and have traditional uses as herbal remedies. At the close of the 2024 growing season at the Tustin Heritage Community Garden, on a late October afternoon, Annie Stanley invited herbalist Richard Mandelbaum to share some of his knowledge as he walked about the garden beds and the perennial areas.
Yeah, Richard Mandelbaum, and I live in Forestburg with my family, and it's wonderful to be here. It's a beautiful spot, beautiful fall day. There were just a couple of bald eagles circling above us. I don't see them at the moment, but can see the river from here. So, yeah, I appreciate being here, and I just thought we could look at some of the plants growing here if y'all would like to do that.
Well, I understand that you're an herbalist and a botanist, so we appreciate your presence here. We're located behind the Western Sullivan Public Library on Tamaro Lane, overlooking the Delaware River, a butterfly byway, and the garden is dedicated to pollinators, planting pollinators to attract bees. And we're standing in the center of the garden here. This happened to be my bed. It doesn't look like it did all summer, but what I was growing was giant Mexican sunflowers. And when I came during the week to start pruning it back, I noticed it was covered with bumblebees. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it's so important for us to plant pollinator-friendly plants, both for the bees. There's so many different species of bees, but also remember butterflies and moths are important pollinators, to a lesser degree ants. Some ants even pollinate, but those are the big ones. Hummingbirds, of course, in our area in the summertime. And you mentioned both Mexico, because you mentioned a Mexican sunflower, and you mentioned pollinators. I think we ought to talk about the milkweed a little bit. What do you think?
Yes, I do. That was my neighbor's garden bed, and I loved watching the progression of that milkweed. Would you like to walk over to there? Because I know that's a very important part of pollinators.
Absolutely. So, of course, we're at the end of the season. There isn't much to look at right now. They're quite beautiful when they're flowering. There's multiple species. The genus for milkweeds is Asclepias, so I can't tell looking at this. It's probably Syriaca, but I can't tell for sure what species it is. But we've got quite a few in our area, and they are special plants. At early stages, the pods are edible if you prepare them right. You can use the sap to slowly wear away warts on the skin, for instance. But mostly this is ecologically important, not as much for medicine for humans, medicine for the planet, really. And as a lot of people are probably aware, this plant has a very special symbiotic relationship with monarch butterflies in particular. And it's not uncommon that butterflies and moths can be very specific to a particular species of plant. And it's both a beautiful thing, but it also means there's a fragility if we, as our species, are doing a lot of ecological destruction. There's a vulnerability there now. And so this is wonderful to see milkweed here, because we're losing milkweed habitat in North America, in large part because of the widespread use of genetically engineered crops that are herbicide resistant. So this is big commercial farms are out there spraying more and killing off a lot of the quote-unquote weeds, which actually are incredibly important plants ecologically. And so we're losing monarchs because of the loss of milkweed habitat here in North America, and also because of loss of habitat where they overwinter down in Mexico. The monarchs are amazing. They will overwinter. I've gotten to be there 3 times in my life so far. It's an amazing place down in the mountains in central Mexico. And in the late winter to early spring, they'll fly all the way back from central Mexico up to the, you know, northern Mexico, southern United States. And then they'll look for milkweeds, because milkweed plants are the only plants that monarch butterflies will lay their eggs on, and nothing else. And that's because the caterpillars only eat milkweed. And so the eggs will hatch on the milkweed. The caterpillars will eat the milkweed. One time I spent an hour out in the field just watching a milkweed caterpillar munch a leaf. And it was very quiet, so I could listen to it just chop, 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 chop. And over an hour, this little caterpillar ate a whole leaf. And then they will, of course, transform into butterflies. And through our summer here where we are in New York and Eastern North America, there will be multiple generations, 5, 6, 7 generations of monarchs, each one only laying eggs on the milkweed plants. And then the final generation, if you will, in the late summertime, we'll make the entire journey back down to central Mexico. It's just amazing to think of a little butterfly flying that whole way. But so important to plant for that reason. And of course, it provides nectar to other pollinators too, not just the monarchs. And you can see the seeds are wind pollinated. So it's got this wonderful design.
What do you recommend that people, how to propagate this plant? Now, you just pulled off the seed head, and that, I call them angel wings, puffy seed heads. How do you propagate this more?
Yeah, certainly you can spread seeds if you like, if you have a greenhouse or you like to grow seeds. Most of the wilder plants like to go through some cold dormancy too. So gardeners, I'm sure, that are listening to this are familiar with like stratifying seed for the winter so it goes through some exposure to cold. Or just planting the seeds in the fall too, directly in the ground. You can also certainly purchase, for folks who are not seed savers and growers as much, there are nurseries that increasingly are providing native plants, including milkweeds. So that's another way. Even if you just have a few plants, it's a nice thing to do.
I noticed as we were walking around earlier that there's a vine growing over here.
Sure, let's take a look.
Because it has little red berries on it, it looks like it'd be good for birds.
Yeah. And actually, we could eat this too, if you wanted to. These, believe it or not, are rose hips. They're just very, very small. This is the multiflora rose, so the scientific name is Rosa multiflora. It's a wild rose. It's not native. We do have some native roses. It often gets put on a list of plants that are quote-unquote invasive. And the reason I'm saying quote-unquote is I think it's important to recognize that these plants still have value. They may be a little bit too exuberant, as I like to say, and maybe we need to keep their populations in check. But ultimately, it's our own doing that has spread these plants around. They like to grow in disturbed areas, so the less we disturb ecosystems for some of these plants, at least, the less we'll see them. But actually, even more to the point, if you go back to earlier in the 20th century, the U.S. government, among others, were actively encouraging people to plant these plants to prevent soil erosion, for instance, to grow on soil that had become overly depleted. So why do we have this plant everywhere? Well, it's our own doing. So I like to not demonize the plants, right? But these are rosehips, super high in vitamin C. Now, this species of rosehip, and you mentioned the birds liking it, is very small. So usually if we as gardeners or herbalists plant a rose, first of all, we can plant one that's less likely to spread so much. And then one particular variety or species of rose that grows very large rosehips, almost the size of like cherry tomatoes, is Rosa rugosa. Wonderful. But these do have the same nutritional benefits, even though they're small. Really excellent source of ascorbic acid, of vitamin C. And the red you're seeing, this beautiful color, are phenolic compounds that are highly antioxidant. They're referred to usually as flavonoids. And what they do is they actually interact with the vitamin C and potentiate it, so that even some supplement companies now, if you look, they'll have flavonoids with the vitamin C in the supplement. And so if you just measured milligram for milligram how much vitamin C is in these compared to a pill of vitamin C, it would be lower, but it's going to be more bioavailable. And roses are pretty easy to identify, even if it didn't have the fruit. And this is where we get into the botany a little bit. But it has these pinnate compound leaves. You can see each leaf divides into these small leaflets and these little teeth along the margins of the leaf. And then see this like funny little shape at the base of the leaves that right here? It's a little spiky looking. That's called a stipule. And roses always have that too. And of course, the prickles. And this might be a surprise to some people, but roses don't have thorns. If you ever want to win a bet and somebody's insisting that roses have thorns, they do not botanically have thorns. Now, they do have prickly little things. A botanist would call this a prickle, not a thorn. A true thorn is much woodier and tougher and embedded into a stem. And when a plant has prickles like a rose, see how you can just plop those right off in your hand? And they have that big, wide base to hold on to the stem. Again, just to say, if you ever want to win a bet that roses don't actually have thorns at all, you could annoy a friend and win that bet. So that's a multiflora rose that we've all been looking at here. Just to say, you can make tea from the petals. In this case, the multiflora rose has small, five-flowered white petals, right? The old roses, the ones that aren't overly bred and hybridized, have five petals. That kind of classic, like, flower shop Valentine's Day rose you're not going to find in the wild. And you can make a nice tea out of rose petals. And a lot of people find them very emotionally uplifting and supportive. But like I said, I like to destigmatize the plant. Sometimes the way these plants get talked about is kind of demonizing them. And in almost all cases, Japanese knotweed the same, barberry the same, we're the ones who did this, you know, and actively planting. And on roadsides or farmers were often actively encouraged to plant these plants as hedgerows or to control soil erosion because they're so vigorous and hardy, they'll grow anywhere. Japanese knotweed was introduced to nurseries as an ornamental. Barberry is still sold by landscapers and nurseries. And so I prefer to talk about plants like this as overly exuberant rather than invasive. And just to say, like, I find it a little ironic that this, I myself have no Native American heritage. Some of you might, but it's usually non-native people talking about the non-native invasive plants. And I think, you know, I gave a talk for my daughter's school once, and I asked all the kids to look around and see if they could point out the most invasive species around. My daughter immediately knew what I was up to, and she's like, "Dad." Yeah, but it's like, yeah, we got to keep things in check a little bit. Mm-hmm. Yep, so they're very high in vitamin C, but they're just so small. But I know some herbalists who use the multiflora rose hips because it's what they have in their area. If you're going to plant a rose, this would not be the one to plant, both because it spreads so much, and also, I mentioned earlier, you can plant a Rosa rugosa, is a great one to plant because they nice big rose hips, like the size of cherry tomatoes almost.
Richard Mandelbaum is a clinical herbalist with a private practice in Forestburg, New York. He co-founded the Arborvitae School of Traditional Herbalism. His background includes both Chinese and Western herbal traditions. More information is available on his website, richardmandelbaum.com.
My name is Annie Stanley. Welcome back to the Tustin Heritage Community Garden, our annual closing garden event. This year we had a special speaker here as well. On top of it, we have our potluck. There's plenty of food. There's a diverse community here, some members, some non-members. And I just wanted to say, it was a better year than last year as far as climate change. The garden did much better. The tomatoes didn't go so well, but I think the flowers flourished and the herbs and certain things. It's always a challenge, but I think it was a more successful year this year. We had plenty of water. Prior years, we've had drought. We didn't have a late frost in the spring, so that helped, or a drought in the spring, like the prior year. We also recruited 2 new board of directors members. One of them is here today, who is also a garden member, Kristen Fitzpatrick. She's going to be our new secretary. And Mary Mellett, who's not here, she's our new treasurer. I'm still acting chair, board member, and we're all on the board with Clayton Lewis, who he's with us. So lots to celebrate, and glad people from the community showed up. Some new people, some old people, and some members, and let's just keep doing it. It's so lovely today. The eagles are flying over. We're seeing things going to rest in a peaceful way at the garden.
Tell me about the special guest that we had. How did you know him?
Well, we had got this funding from the Upper Delaware Scenic Byway to have guest speakers this season. We applied for that grant, and they awarded it to us, and Richard Maplebaum is here. I had heard about him from Laura Silverman and some other local naturalists, and he was one of 4 that we had this season, and it was really great. And we had to reschedule him from September because we had a torrential rain that happened, so he's piggybacking on our event today, which is, it ended up being fabulous.
Well, thank you, Annie. Thank you for your work, and thank you for organizing this today. It's a beautiful way to end the garden season 2024 in Tustin Heritage Community Garden. It's beautiful. The sunshine is streaming on us, and we're surrounded by wonderful people and healthy soil, and now we're going to have some delicious hot food.
Oh, yeah, and thank you, WJFF Radio, Farm and Country. We love your show, and we love your featuring us throughout the season in different phases. And thank you, Rosie.
Thank you, Annie.
All right, there's a bounty of food, everybody.
You did see that.
It's funny because what are the soups that are there?
There's the garlic soup, and they're all vegetarian. Garlic, carrot, ginger, apple, and some leafy rice.
And this is the garlic table.
Garlic knot bread.
Salad with the garlic dressing, honey with fermented garlic. Lebanese garlic sauce.
Nice. Sounds good.
Yeah.
For WJFF Radio Catskill, it's Rosie Starr in Narrowsburg at the Tustin Heritage Community Garden as we close yet another garden season 2024. The Tustin Heritage Community Garden is located down DeMarro Lane behind the Western Sullivan Public Library in Narrowsburg, New York. More information is available at the Tustin Heritage Community Garden Facebook page.
Can I just pop in one more thing, Rosie?
Sure. Here is a taste from my recent conversation with botanist Diana Beresford Kroger. Her knowledge for the global importance of trees is outstanding, and her passion for a bioplan to plant trees is so impressive, I felt compelled to record an interview with her. Diana was gracious to take my telephone call at her home in Canada. Here is a sample of one of the initiatives we discussed.
The people of the United States, and I am talking to all of you, I want you to reestablish the chestnut Castanea dentata. And there is experiments going on at the American Chestnut Foundation, and the headquarters are in Asheville in North Carolina. And go to them and get one nut from them, or get a tree from them. And their website is tacf.org. You can get everybody in the United States should be growing, at least on the eastern coast anyway, should be growing that and helping this American Chestnut Foundation to grow these chestnuts. Now, I want to tell you something. I have that tree disease-free growing in my arboretum. And what I did with that, and this is going back into the United States as a gift to the people. What I did is I went to all kinds of ancient forest area and I swiped some of the soil from around old, old trees. And I used it as a mulch, hoping that the fungal variation biodiversity in that old, old earth around forests would benefit this particular tree because it was an extraordinary species of the United States. It was functionally fantastic. And it's also a healthy plant and it's also a food, of course, as you all know. So that's how I did it. And I did not leave this tree dry out during our last couple of terrible summers. So you really have to pay attention to this one. But I think it's worth it. I think it's worth it. I would advise everybody to have one of these and phone up or contact the American Chestnut Foundation and just get them in, baby. Just get them in.
I love this idea as a gift giving to the earth, Christmas yeah. and Hanukkah gifts of trees.
Oh, yeah, Hanukkah gifts would be fantastic. Yeah, what a good idea, Rosie. Absolutely. Yep. I'm on that one.
Diana, as we close, would you please share with us a seasonal Gaelic blessing?
Oh, I would love to do that. In Gaelic, our Christmas is called Nollag, N-O-L-L-A-G. And our Irish Christmas is the 6th of January. And Irish Christmas is Lá Nollag Beag. And it is the Christmas for all women. And in that Christmas, you put a light at your window and you decorate the little candle or whatever the light is at the window. And the youngest person in the house lights that light, lights that candle. And the meaning of this is, I put my candle of light on the window to welcome all people into my heart and into my home.
TACF.org has more information on the American chestnut. Listen for more of my conversation with botanist Diana Beresford Kroger on Radio Catskill in the weeks ahead. Until then, DianaBeresfordKroger.com has more information on her documentary film and her 8 authored books. We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by a Radio Catskill volunteer. Special thanks goes to our guests, herbalist Richard Mandelbaum, Tustin Heritage Community Garden Director Annie Stanley, and botanist Diana Beresford Kroger, author and activist with a bio plan on planting native trees.
Hanukkah, oh Hanukkah, come light my menorah. Let's have a party, we'll all dance the horror. Gather round my table, I'll give you a treat. Dreidels to play with and latkes to eat. Hanukkah, oh Hanukkah, come light my menorah. Bask in the glow of a mystical aura. Candles aflame at the end of the day. Chasing the cold and the darkness away. And while we are swinging, the candles burn low. One for each night, they shed light just like long ago. One for each night, they shed light just like long ago. One for each night, shedding a light just like long ago. Down
Support comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, fighting for clean air, land, and water since 2008, both locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Ronald Kelson. I want to thank you for joining us on this Saturday morning. We have a very special presentation for you. Radio Catskill presents The Crossing, a one-act play by Cynthia Nash. Please enjoy The Crossing.
I am Cynthia Nash, the author of The Crossing, the play you are about to hear. It was inspired by the Skinner's Falls Bridge, a one-lane iron bridge